Devices Radio Network.
Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Advices Radio. You're listening to episode number 88. I'm your host, Scott McNally, and this show is brought to you by True Nutrition. Today, we have with us Maya Underwood. She is an anthropologist. She's researching us. She is learning to tell the story of the modern 2018 bodybuilder from a social perspective. Let's face it. Like, what we do is weird. What we do is different. What we do is quite misunderstood. Maya was an outsider who had embedded herself into various facets of bodybuilding communities, and she has learned to translate that to quote-unquote normal people outside of our community so they might better understand us on a number of levels, all the way to the drugs that we use in the sport. It's a very misunderstood area, I believe. And I think that long term, it's people like her that I think will be able to help us maintain and improve relations with doctors and with health. I think this is a good thing. And I have a lot of fun talking with her, too. It's a very meta conversation. I think that there are a lot of things that I even learned about myself. And then we go way off too on a couple things. Like, have you heard of the term a bro job? No, yeah, neither had I. But apparently Maya thinks that's a thing. We are going to discuss that toward the end of the show. It's a lot of fun. So stick around. Listen to this. Guys, we have a bunch more stuff coming up. But hey, if you noticed in the beginning, I mentioned that the show is brought to you by True Nutrition. This has been something that's been in the making for a while, and True Nutrition is specifically a company that I sought out. I wanted them to be a part of what we're doing. I truly believe in the products that they sell, and I am so grateful to team up with a company like True Nutrition. So you guys can, at this point now, use our code, ADVICES, and that will let True Nutrition know that you are a listener of the show and that you support what we're doing. And in turn, that shows them a return on investment so they will continue supporting what we are doing here and I can keep bringing the shows out to you. It's pretty cool. I'm pretty excited. We'll get more into all that stuff as we go. We'll talk about specific products. I'm using their citrulline malate now at about 8 grams pre-workout. Mix that in with any pre-workout that I'm using. It's a great product. And there's a whole bunch of little cool tricks and things that they have available that I like to use of that nature, intra-workouts, etc. We'll discuss it more as it makes sense through the programs. We'll also have commercials. Like I said, you can support us by supporting them. Go to truenutrition.com, use the code ADVICES. We've got a bunch more coming out this week. We've got a whole bunch of stuff in the future. I know that there is a new clinical muscle. Ryan and Haley Delph have a new program, The Come Up. That'll be coming out soon. Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. We have Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson coming out on Thursday. I'm always excited to record with Scott. And a whole bunch more, guys. So thank you for listening to Advices Radio. I hope your training, your nutrition, everything is on point. Keep listening to the programs. Let's keep pushing forward. We've got a hell of a start. Let's make this year fucking awesome. All right, guys, welcome back to Advices Radio. Scott McNally, and up next, this is going to be interesting. I have with me an anthropologist, and she's studying us. I'd have to say this is like Gorillas in the Mist, kind of, but with bodybuilders. Researcher Maya Underwood, thank you for being with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Scott. Thanks for taking an interest in my research.
What you're doing is, it's just so fascinating because, you know, I'm on the inside of bodybuilding. Just to kind of clue everyone in. Okay, so first one thing I want to say is, now the more people I've talked to that are science-based, like educators, the more I see that, now your goal is to share as much information as you can with us. I'm going to have to ask you to slow it down just a little bit because I know you have so much in your brain. Basically, you're developing the story of what this culture is. And we're only going to be able to share, I think, only just a small sliver of that story, I think, today on the show. But I think that the insights you have are really cool. So I want to make sure we take our time. We probably won't get through all of them or even close to them or even half of them, but we can look at a little sliver and we can look at those slivers more closely.
So just keep me in check if I get too carried away.
All right. So start us out, what I want to know is, so, you know, you're talking to bodybuilders here. Tell us, first of all, I want to get real basic. What is an anthropologist and what type of anthropology do you do specifically?
Yeah, well, an anthropologist is just someone who studies culture. So most of the listeners will think of an anthropologist as someone who goes into another culture, learns the language and their way of life, and then writes it up and sort of tells the story of those people. And indeed, that's what I do. I go into bodybuilding cultures and I learn the language because it is a completely different language. And I learn the practices and the way that they interact. So I hang out with bodybuilders online. It's what anthropologists do. It's called participant observation. So we participate in the culture that we're studying and at the same time as we are observing what's going on. So it's like living like the people that you're studying in order to understand how they live. So it's about immersing yourself in the community.
And your goal now, this is something we had talked for maybe an hour on a previous day, just to kind of go over what we wanted to discuss today. Something I learned, and I want to share it with everybody else. Your goal, you're not gathering statistics, right?
No. My goal is to tell a story of the community. So it's a bit different in that, you know, when you're doing statistics, you're dealing with thousands or, you know, hundreds at least, usually thousands of people, and you're collecting little bits of data according to questions that you as a researcher have designed and, you know, questions that you think are important as an outsider. So what an anthropologist does instead is go into the community and see what is important to the community and to the, you know, the practice of the culture that we are studying. So it's about sort of suspending your judgment and your preconceptions of what bodybuilders are going to be like and going in and seeing what they're actually like and sort of privileging their perspective over your own perspective. So it's anthropologists are in this sort of weird space of being insider but outsider at the same time. So it allows us to see things that perhaps people that are so immersed in the community can't see. But it allows us to see things that people working from outside, which most steroid research has been, you know, online surveys and that sort of thing. There's stuff that we see because we're insiders and we understand the culture that these guys don't get.
Absolutely. That makes total sense. How did you first get interested in bodybuilding?
Yeah, well, look, I've always been interested in bodies and the crazy things that people do to their bodies. I'm, you know, heavily tattooed, well, reasonably heavily for a woman, tattooed myself, and I've had piercings and stuff. And I was just like, well, what makes me do these things to my body? And
did you do the tongue piercing?
I didn't do the tongue piercing. Okay. No, no. And I didn't go below the waist because I've heard horror stories of that's going wrong.
I was going to be gentlemanly. I wasn't going to ask.
look, I'm Australian. We're a bit rough around the edges here.
Good. All right.
So I started with this interest in body modification, and I really wanted to study tattoo, but tattoo I couldn't get funding for. You know, it's interesting, but it doesn't have national benefit. And so I sort of just fell into bodybuilding by accident. It started off as a sort of a career decision. I thought, well, muscle is interesting.
Yeah.
I maybe could get funding for that because it's got the steroid angle and that's crime and that's health and I'll get money for that. So I'll start doing some research on bodybuilding. The plan was to just spend, maybe a year, further my career and move on. But since getting into it, it is just so fascinating. I could spend the rest of my career with bodybuilders and still not answer all the questions that I want to answer. You know, it's just such a fascinating area. And I've just become absolutely convinced that we as a society have dropped the ball when it comes to image and performance enhancing drug users. We as a society are failing a whole huge demographic of particularly young men, but also women. That we're causing all this harm that we could prevent. So I've become, while I sort of fell into this by accident, I have become really passionate about this cause.
Yeah, I feel like with this type of thing, it would be easy to become obsessed with it because you could just keep going deeper and deeper into anything that you got into. Oh. You know, be it a foreign culture, which I guess to you this or to anybody outside of it, it is in a way a foreign culture.
It is. Like, I know that perhaps some anthropologists look down their noses at me because I'm not, going off and learning an official other language and hanging out with little black people or something, but bodybuilding is a completely foreign culture. Yes, most of the all the bodybuilders I speak to speak English, but it's a different type of English, and there is a whole language that I do not understand, and there is a whole humor. I mean, oh my God, I could spend, a lifetime just getting to the depths of all of the different memes that are used to communicate in this society,
Hey, something you told me that I thought was really interesting, because you said, you learn to tell the story so you can start weeding out what things mean. And that's kind of what you're saying here. Tell me tell everybody about the thing about the up the trend. And how, because the misconception that could come along with that, because I didn't even think of that. I just see it as a joke.
Yeah. Well, all the previous literature on online bodybuilding communities, which is where I primarily work, is online, because that's, a lot of bodybuilders congregate there. And all the previous literature had said, in these online communities, they encourage risk-taking and they, encourage people to take more and more drugs. And I went into these communities and after spending a bit of time in there, you learn the humor. And yeah, if someone's put a post, I'm experiencing this particular side effect, within minutes, someone has posted, up the trend. That's the answer, up the trend. Now, as an outsider looking in, people go, oh my God, these people are encouraging them to take one of the, perhaps potentially most problematic drugs in the bodybuilder's arsenal, and they're encouraging them to take more of it. Oh my God, this is all about risk taking. But once you've spent, even 5 minutes in a bodybuilding community, you realize that there is a certain sense of humor. Yeah. And up the trend is a joke, which, perhaps the past literature has missed the humor in these communities, because what I find is harm reduction. In these communities, most people are, have you had your bloods done? Show us your blood work. Have you considered, AIs or Clomid or HCG or whatever? It's about harm reduction. Most of the advice I'm seeing, the only advice that I see that is about increasing risk is joking, and everyone in the community knows that it's joking.
Yeah.
So, this is the benefits of this sort of anthropological perspective of being immersed in the culture, is that you actually get to understand it properly.
I think that helped me understand better of what your benefit is. Tell me about Z's. That's where this all started, right?
Now, Now, I'll just have a sort of disclaimer at the start of this conversation about Ziz.
Okay.
Yeah, look, I did start my research in the Ziz community, but please don't switch off now and say she knows nothing about bodybuilding. I understand that Ziz and his fans don't represent the majority of bodybuilders. In fact, they're a fairly small niche of the bodybuilding community, and some would say they're not even real bodybuilders. So please don't hold it against me. I started there.
Some of these listeners, they might not even know who he is.
Yeah. I forget that there are people who don't know who Ziz is. Now, Ziz is a Russian-born Australian recreational bodybuilder. So he never competed. He moved to Australia as a child, was a self-confessed computer geek, played World of Warcraft 12 hours a day, was rejected by women, and he ended up selling his World of Warcraft profile and buying a gym membership.
No kidding. Well, I don't know all of that about him, but the beginning thing I just want to paint to the listeners is he was like the stereotypical not very big douchebag that was kind of hitting like classic bodybuilder poses, and people kind of fell in love with this guy, right? And he was using massive amounts of drugs, and he was partying.
He is termed the father of aesthetics.
Okay.
So it's that, and probably only in his fandom, but he was part of this sort of mainstreaming of bodybuilding practice. So, and the popularizing of bodybuilding practices in the mainstream community. So it's about, you know, the lifting and the dietary practices and the hair removal and stuff that goes with competitive bodybuilding, but he's sort of made it more acceptable to the mainstream in that the muscular ideal he represented was a much smaller sort of think fitness model type look, which is termed aesthetic bodybuilding. So it's about not just appealing to those that idealize extreme musculature. It's about appealing to the masses, being alpha over other men, but still not too big that you're going to turn women off, sort of thing. So they call it aesthetic bodybuilding. So it's not the same as, you know, the mass monsters that we see in, on the Olympia stage.
And he got really popular, right?
Yeah. So he came along when social media was just starting out and smartphones were becoming really popular. And I think it was perfect sort of timing in that he was quite good at marketing himself. He had a body that a lot of people admired, and he was an internet troll. So he had a sense of humor, didn't take himself too seriously. And he'd post videos of himself, mucking around, trolling people, dancing. They have a specific style of dancing, but I won't go into that.
Really?
Yeah, muzzing. It's some would say muscle dancing. It's sort of like sped up bodybuilding poses done to trance music. but it's hilarious. YouTube search muzzing, muzzing. It is absolutely hilarious. But he popularized that form of dance. So he just through his sort of humor and his body, and, his body gave him a platform. It gave him a voice.
And, a lot of people got really, really into this. Younger people. Because when I was coaching at the time, and there was this group of younger guys that were getting in shape, and they kind of want to work with me, but they kind of didn't, because they didn't want to have to follow a really strict plan. They didn't want to have to get like really hardcore. And they were more like, no, we're focusing on our aesthetics was the answer.
Yes, it's all about the aesthetic. So, he appeals to especially young men, say 17 to 25, because he had a certain philosophy that, his body gave him this voice that he was able to spout certain philosophy, like you might have heard, we're all going to make it, brah. So it was about men supporting each other to be better. You don't have to be sitting in your dark room playing your computer games and lonely and stuff like that. You can make yourself better.
Which that's appealing. I could see how that would be. I could see how people get into that.
Yeah. And I think he is part of this sort of following on from the metrosexual, some call it the spornosexuals, which is sports porn metrosexual. Huh. It's this.
You're blowing my mind.
The metrosexual sort of concern with hair and tan and that sort of thing, combined with the muscularity of a sort of athlete and the sexualization of the porn star. So it's the guys with the, you know, the singlets that are really low cut at the front and the armholes that are really big. So you can see all of their muscles and they're strutting around with their hair done and stuff like this. This journalist, Mark Simpson, called it the spornosexual. Huh. And Ziz sort of popularized that look and sort of made vanity masculine, you know, and made it okay for men to look at other men's bodies. I mean, that had always happened in the bodybuilding subculture, but he sort of mainstreamed that with the whole "you myron brah, are you admiring me brother?" Go on.
Well, what I wanted to get at then is, so you saw this guy, what drew you to that? What, because it sounds like you've enlightened me. I now know a lot more about Ziz than I did before we've talked, and it's kind of fascinating stuff. But what was it that drew you into him?
Well, look, to be honest, I was looking for a project. As I said, I was sort of career driven, looking for a project. I Googled Australia steroids, and up pops this Ziz guy, and I'm watching his videos, going, "This guy's a complete dickhead." But look how many views he's got on his YouTube, and it's been at the time. I mean, he was popular before. He had like 80,000 followers. Then he died in a Thai sauna of a heart attack. His fans will attribute it to his steroid use combined with his recreational drug use. So I thought, well, why is this guy? And you know, it was years after his death that I started doing this research. Why is he so popular in a day of sort of flash in the pan internet celebrity? How can this guy have such longevity after his death? I mean, there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Ziz fans all over the world.
Wow.
Particularly popular in South America and India. He really appeals. And I thought, well, what is it that appeals? So at first I was really interested in the place of the image and performance enhancing drugs in his popularity. And you know, I found out, this is sort of introduced me to my first sort of interest in bro science, in the experiential knowledge of bodybuilders and this interplay of science and bro science, which I've been exploring in my further research. And on this sort of disconnect between bodybuilders and mainstream perceptions of bodybuilding risk, you know, that bodybuilders find it really laughable that the mainstream see what they do as hugely dangerous. And so that sort of introduced me to that. And you know, one of my Ziz fans gave me this wonderful story of the Virgin Killer hoax. Have you know the Virgin Killer in University of California, Santa Barbara shooting? Is Elliot Rodger. He killed 7 people, including himself, at the University of California. And the freelance reporter investigating this stumbled across some fake Elliot Rodger social media profiles that bodybuilders had put together, right? And so they'd made these fake profiles for Elliot Rodger and then they'd friended him. So this journalist, Emma Foster, contacted them. Now, these bodybuilders thought it was hilarious, you know, that this journalist is contacting them. So they told her this story that it was creatine that put him in a really dark place. That and he, the death of his friend Hugh Watmay, in a tragic squatting accident, pushed him over the edge and made him go on this shooting spree.
Oh, my God.
Now, and she reported this in the Daily Mirror.
Oh, wow.
There was creatine and the death of Hugh Watmay. So bodybuilders around the world are in hysterics at the stupidity of this journalist.
Huh.
And I thought it really points to that disconnect. Like, as a society, we're really ready to see what bodybuilders do as dangerous. And, you know, so ready that we'll report it in newspapers. It's it's just, so this Ziz community got me really interested in iPads, image and performance enhancing drugs, and their place in the wider society, got me interested in moving beyond what other people cite as the motivations for use, like people's, you know, surprisingly previous research has found people use these drugs to be bigger and leaner. Well, you know, that's pretty amazing. But I wanted to get beneath that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
What else is there? And to find, you know, stuff like, for the Ziz fandom anyway, it's a shortcut. It's not only that you get the muscle quicker, it's about getting the muscle when you are at your sexual peak. It's about getting the muscle when you're 21, 22 and you haven't really got any other form of power. You know, it's also about tailoring the look, you know, a particular look, a trend look or a D-bowl look, or it's about having a consistent appearance so that, you know, you're looking good all the time. You're not bulking and cutting and having quite, you know, just differences in your physique. It's about looking good all the time so that you can always go to the music festival with your shirt off, you know?
You are blowing my mind with how much you've thought about this stuff. It's awesome. It's crazy.
Way too much. And I struggled over the Christmas New Year break to not think about it and not to talk to my bodybuilders online
I'm glad to have you back. You're charged up.
Yes. Oh, mate, I'm so pumped to get back into this. Go on.
Well, I was just going to say, so from there, you know, you mentioned you started to focus on the performance-enhancing drugs, and that kind of, you started getting led more to, outside of Z's, into more of like what we would call like the mainstream bodybuilding community.
Yeah. So, I mean, I started off with Ziz and his community because as an anthropologist, they provided this sort of bounded, fairly homogenous community where they talk about women all the same way and they have the same ideal that they're aiming for. And it sort of gave me this sort of nice, neat, bounded community, which is hard to find online. And so to explore these drugs and also other things about Ziz, how he displayed his body and that sort of thing. But I wanted to – I realized, you know, and that bodybuilding is much broader and much more varied than Ziz fans. So I started going into bodybuilding, closed bodybuilding groups on Facebook and watching YouTube videos and hanging out there to a lesser extent in forums. I'm still working up the guts to really engage in forums to any great degree because my first attempts, I just get trolls and I get really nothing useful. But hopefully I'll get better at working in those communities. So I wanted to start looking at image and performance enhancing drug use in more breadth and looking at the variety of ways that these are used. And I think I've had some success in that, although the guys that usually engage with me are the guys that appreciate science, you know. So I'm probably getting one end of the spectrum of user, you know, the quite expert user that reads the science and stuff like that. So I'm probably not getting a fully representative sample, but I'm working on ways to sort of engage more broadly with the community.
Okay. So tell me the story of the steroid using bodybuilder.
Yeah, well,
I know that's a big thing, but I feel like this is our jump off point. And specifically too, I wanted to focus on how the gear fits into this profile.
Yeah. It's interesting in that I don't think any steroid using bodybuilder has ever said to me that you know that it's not problematic what they do. I think it's probably not as problematic, and I mean the bodybuilding community will tell you that these drugs are much safer than is reported in the medical literature. That's all scaremongering and the media is all scaremongering and you can do so safely. And there are some indications that this is the case, that you can use relatively safely. But, you know, I'm not a medical scientist, not for me to judge.
Okay.
But
Are you convinced, though? You don't sound convinced.
I have, you know, people like Harrison Pope, who some of you listeners might have heard of, who are experts, have worked in the area, and have found, you know, the increased risk of heart problems as a result of use and things like that, and you know, less significant side effects, the gyno hair loss, blah blah blah.
Yeah, I
having been in this community for the last few years, I am much closer to the bodybuilding end of understanding the risks of these drugs than I am to the, you know, the medical literature.
The facts are
we don't know. There's not been enough research done to say how risky these drugs are on the in the long term.
And at these doses, especially. This is
right. Most of the research that is done is on much smaller therapeutic doses. So we don't know at the large doses. I mean, some guys are using grams of gear a week. What sort of impact that has, and we've got sort of some anecdotal stuff, but you can't really put much on that. And it's hard for me to judge because in this community, a risk is normalized. Mm. And it's you know, so, someone told me, you know, for a lot of guys, the higher the risk, the higher the effectiveness is their logic. You know, it's going to be more effective if it's more risky. I'm not going to go to this trainer because he's prescribing me low doses. I need to go to this trainer because he's telling me to take all of the gear, you know.
Yeah.
So some guys seem to have that sort of attitude. There's a certain denial of risk that, you know, if someone experiences a side effect, you see this on the forums. Oh, well, you must be using it wrong.
Okay.
It's not a risk of the drug itself. It's the fact that you're not using it correctly, and that's why you're experiencing side effects. The risks are so subjective. Everyone is different, and people experience risk and harm at much lower doses than other people who are using these huge doses and have no problems. It's such a blurry, and, you know, we don't have the medical research to say. So I'm sort of torn between, yeah, look, this is, you know, safe as houses, it's no problem at all, and then I go to conferences and present my research with all these other drug researchers that are saying, oh, you know, fire and brimstone, this is they're all going to be dead in a couple of decades, and you know, some of them will say it's the equivalent of our knowledge when most smokers were still in their 30s. We did not know what was going to happen as they aged.
Wow.
So some people say that there is this calamity just around the corner as the steroid users age. Now, I don't know if that is the case.
Yeah.
So I sort of throw my hands up and say, look, I don't know. My job is to tell the stories of the bodybuilders, and the bodybuilders will tell you that this is really, you can use safely. There's things that you can do to reduce the harms of these drugs. So that's what I report. Then it's up to the medicos to judge the practices that I'm reporting on to see if these are actually, you know, useful ways of reducing harm, things like that. That's not really my job, is to build rapport with the community and understand these drugs from their perspective, because we're missing that. We don't know. You know, all these medicos and drug workers and stuff are banging on about harm reduction. No one's ever asked the community what they do. Now, that to me is astounding. As an anthropologist, you know, as soon as you spend half an hour in these communities, you see harm reduction being practiced. And no one's ever asked them, you know, what do you do? They're too busy coming from outside saying this is what you should do. You know, to see the huge amount of effort that people, and this, you know, the systematic nature of use and the very planned and considered nature of most steroid use that I've seen, you know, it's astounding to me that no one's actually looked into this before. You know, if we want to reduce the harms of these drugs, we need to know what people are already doing and whether that's effective or not, you know?
Yeah. I love that answer. Let's talk a little bit about the drugs then. You had a ton of thoughts on insulin. Do we want to talk about like anabolics though before we go there?
Yeah, let's talk about anabolics first, or image and performance enhancing drugs in general, and then,
okay,
then we can go into insulin. But stop me if I start going on too much. So, yeah, so what I've been looking at is the harms of these drugs, that, or the risks of these drugs from the consumer's perspective, and comparing that to how they're talked about in the medical literature, because the medical literature is all, as we know, is all, you know, we've got to stop them doing this, it's so dangerous. What are the harms from the consumer's perspective? Well, the harms are sort of multifaceted. There's the physical harms, which is and the psychological harms, which the medical literature sort of touch on. But then for the consumer, there's also the social harms and the risks that they take socially, the occupational harms, you know, the and the relationship harms that can come from some of these drugs. So it's the harms are much broader than just the physical stuff, which is, I mean, understandably the medical literature focuses on the physical, but when a consumer has to look at the harms and benefits and weigh those up, it's much more than just the physical. And, you know, and this boundary between what is a harm of the drug and what is a benefit of the drug is a really quite blurry, dynamic and subjective. So for one individual, you know, the fact that trend makes them more animalistic in bed could be a benefit because their girlfriend likes it. For another person, it could be a harm because it, you know, their girlfriend doesn't like it. So it's quite individual.
Yeah, yeah.
It's dynamic. It changes over the life course. So, you know, suppression of fertility when you're a young bloke, that could be a benefit. But then when you're older and you're settling down and you want to have kids, then it's a harm. So this boundary is a really blurry, dynamic, subjective boundary. It's not as clear cut as the medical literature makes out. Things like Trenkoff, that can be really debilitating and quite dangerous. But I've had some guys go, Trenkoff is a bonus because it tells me I've got real tren. So, you know, I'm looking at the, and this is what anthropologists do. They deal with the messiness of real life. So that's what I'm sort of looking at, the culture of risk, this normalization that I was talking about, the denial, but also this discouraging of use. I've seen guys say, you look great without drugs. You don't need them. Now, true. That runs completely counter to what the previous research has said, you know, this encouragement of risk-taking.
Right.
Or, you know, why up the dose when you're looking so good as you are? You know, so I'm seeing a lot of contradictions that, you know, this outside perspective, people that come and spend 5 minutes looking at a Facebook page and say, oh, you know, this is all so bad. When you spend a bit of time in these communities and you actually talk to these guys in depth, like, this is one thing I was really surprised about, is I didn't expect to like bodybuilders so much. You know, I've become really close to a lot of guys now and really sort of become part of their lives. So I hear about when they proposed to their girlfriend and I see them on Facebook with their niece and nephew. And, you know, I become sort of part of their lives, and I get to see their use in broader context. It's not just, you know, it's not just a momentary interest. It's about immersing myself.
Wow.
So yeah.
It's amazing to have social media to be able to do that. I mean, we could, it would have to be a completely different type of research, you know, without Facebook available to you.
That's
because that's what you mainly use, right?
I'd be hanging out in gyms.
Yeah,
I'd be hanging out in gyms, and there's only so much you can tell from hanging out in gyms, because you don't really see the bodybuilders interact with each other as much in a gym. I mean, there is interaction, but when they come together on social media and discuss their use in a lot of depth, and you know, the beauty of the anonymity of social media, you know, or the at least potential anonymity, if you want, allows people to talk really freely about it. And I think the fact that, you know, they're talking to me through a computer allows them to be a lot more honest than perhaps they would be if they were face to face with me.
Okay.
And stuff. So yeah, I get this whole different perspective. But anyway, that's what I was going to say. I was going to talk about not only is there this harm reduction, but there, for some guys, performance and image enhancing drugs are a harm reduction in themselves, in that it's got them off recreational drugs. They've become, you know, very clean living. And, you know, bodybuilders have some of the most healthy lifestyles I've ever seen. And, you know, some of them are dead boring. And, you know, they're just sitting at home eating their planned meals. But so healthy. And, you know, I could never aspire to be that healthy. but they've gone from, you know, using cocaine and stuff every weekend or weekend to, you know, having their training routine and their diet all planned out and their systematic use of steroids, and they feel much better about themselves and they feel much more in control. So for them, it's sort of using steroids is less risk than the alternative.
I think spoke to maybe 60% of the people I know right now just by saying.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm
really interested in this. So if anyone wants to talk to me about this, I'm going to have my contact details at the end. I'm really interested in the use of these drugs as harm reduction, because not only are there those people that are using recreational drugs or have struggling in their lives and then find their way through bodybuilding and steroid use, but there is a whole bunch of guys, and I've talked to quite a few, who have low testosterone.
Oh, yeah.
And because it's decreasing at a population level. You know, most guys will have less testosterone than their father did, who had less testosterone than their grandfather. And there's numerous reasons for this. But, you know, I've talked to guys that are depressed, they're suicidal, but the doctor says, oh, your testosterone's within normal range, you know, for an 80-year-old or whatever, though you're only in your 20s, we're not going to prescribe you, especially in Australia. I think it's a bit better in the States. But, you know, Australia, we're really strict on prescription of testosterone. And so these guys, you know, the doctor will prescribe them antidepressants and all of these things rather than deal with the root cause of the problem.
Yeah,
so they have to go and use black market gear. You know, we're forcing people that would otherwise go through the medical system to use black market gear.
We have a lot of that here too. Yeah, there's a lot of that here too. We, you know,
yeah, right.
For us, it's the cutoff line, I believe, is about 35 years old, and I've worked with people, I've talked to people. One of the listeners of another one of our shows, a client of mine, actually, this is before he was a client. He was just listening to our shows. He reached out to us, 22 years old. I think his testosterone was like 94 or something. Never touched steroids in his life, and he couldn't get help. He couldn't get help anywhere. He went to doctors around his own home. He talked to an HRT clinic, which is real progressive. They wouldn't touch him because of his age.
Wow.
He eventually found a doctor, but he had to fly out of state to see this doctor in person for the first visit. And then, and I think he paid a lot out of pocket. It was very expensive, but yeah. So we do have similar situations for sure.
Right.
But I have heard you guys are a lot tougher over there.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Some of the stuff that we have in Australia, where I live in Queensland, steroids are a Schedule 1 drug equivalent to heroin.
They're tough in the importing and everything is, I hear, very dangerous over there. Bad news.
Yeah, and we're getting doctors in huge trouble for prescribing AIs and things like this. Yep. It's ridiculous. I talk to GPs, one of which who has said to me, you know, these drugs can be used at safe doses. I've seen people do it,
yeah.
And he works with consumers. But he said to me, I can't prescribe AIs or anything that is going to prevent the harms of these drugs. What I have to do is wait for them to experience the harms of these drugs, to wait for them to get gyno, then I can prescribe an AI.
Wow.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And this is what I was saying before. We are completely dropping the ball when it comes to these guys. A lot of the guys tell me I would get more support if I was addicted to heroin than I do as a steroid user, you know?
Yeah.
We as a society glamorize muscle, and we have movie stars and TV stars and things that are really muscular. We put our kids in costumes, you know, superhero costumes with built-in pecs and abs and biceps. And then we wonder why men idealized muscle and take these drugs, which are extremely effective for achieving that ideal. Hmm. And when they do, we throw up our hands as a society and we say, oh, you shouldn't have done that. Hmm. Now you're on your own. You can deal with it all by yourself. This is fucking ridiculous. You know, we provide support for alcoholics, for heroin addicts, for smokers, for users of drugs that are much more harmful, and yet we can't provide an AI or HCG or Clomid or something like that to a consumer of steroids. I think it's just absolutely appalling.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So it's amazing. I didn't think you're gonna. It's just the directions that you can take this into.
You know, oh, there's so many directions. I have not got enough lifetimes, I tell you.
Do you see overall, you know, you mentioned a lot of people that say had issues in the past that are using steroids for harm reduction. Do you see a lot of like the addictive personality in bodybuilders? Because I see it a lot. And there's a fine line between what's the addictive personality and what's just somebody who can be so rigorous and focused. Is there variation within that? Because that's the key definitely. Thing we all have is a focus. Some of it comes from good places, some of it comes from not so good places.
And look, I am the first to agree with the fact that a lot of the focus and the goal setting and being driven that you can get from bodybuilding can translate into other aspects of your life.
Yeah.
I've had my guys say, well, you know, I thought this was my limit and then I broke that limit and now I know that I can achieve anything that I set my mind to, and it's a real positive.
I've said those exact words.
Yeah, it's and you know, I think bodybuilding is hugely beneficial, but there is this slippery slope. And like, as an anthropologist, what we do is, as I said at the start, we live like the people that we study. So I started doing some lifting. Strangely enough, Ziz inspired me to do some lifting, which is pretty sad. But I started doing some lifting. I'm never that good at it. I got up to a sort of body weight deadlift, nothing super good, and I'm natty and I'm old and female. So I've got everything against me. But you know, I started doing this and I felt amazing. It's like I have built this body into existence. Like my body was just this thing that carted around my brain before. But then I sort of became aware of it in ways that I had never considered. And, you know, to be honest, I thought lifting was going to be easy. I really did.
Did you?
Yeah, I thought, how hard is it? You pick up heavy things, you put heavy things back down. It's not that hard. But it took me what, 6 months to get my deadlift technique correct. You know, it was so much harder than I thought. And the relationship that I developed with my body through bodybuilding, you know, the fact that you need to be present in your body to do the lift and not thinking about what you're going to do when you get home or you need from the shops or what you're going to have for dinner for tonight. You know, you've got to be present. And that to me is hugely beneficial. To embody your body is hugely beneficial. And the breathing, the deep breath that is involved in the lifting is really relaxing. And I can see why. And it allowed me to experience why bodybuilders do this. And I was carrying myself differently. You know, I was more upright. I was more confident. So I could see all the benefits. But then, you know, I had these psychologists that work with bodybuilders say, oh, Maya, you know, you've got to watch out. It's a really slippery slope. Hmm. And I went, oh, you know, bullshit. You know, I know what I'm doing here. And I found myself getting, after a while, a bit obsessed with it, you know, that I was looking at the small amount of fat on my body. And I mean, I'm mid 40s and I've had two kids. I've got a bit of fat, but I got it down fairly low and there was just this little bit on my abs that I really hated. Hmm. And my feelings for that bit of fat were way out of proportion. And, you know,
I saw your pictures, the pictures you've put on, you know, on Facebook. You looked great when you got into shape, you know, so.
Oh, thank you.
But you didn't feel that way though, is what you're saying at the time.
And and that's, I probably was in some of the best shape that I'd ever been in my life, because when I was young, you know, I had my own drug problems and things. I was just skinny. But, you know, to have muscle, and I was probably in the best shape of my life, but I was probably more dissatisfied than I'd ever been,
because
the intense focus on my body made me go a bit loopy. Like, I started getting these swings in my body image. Like, some days I could look and go, oh, you're looking really good, and that's probably the days I posted on social media. Then other days I'd look at myself and go, oh my God, you are fucking disgusting. Look at yourself. You're so far off where you want to be. And I was getting these wild swings, and I had to step back from bodybuilding a bit and go, yeah, look, I need to have this in perspective and have a balanced life, because I could see how you could become really quite obsessed. And I mean, I'm doing it on a tiny scale compared to what the guys I'm talking to are doing. You know, I was training, you know, 3 or 4 times a week, not 6 days a week, several times a day and stuff.
And I know you haven't talked a lot to competitors yet, but the looming deadline of stepping on stage into the mix, and it takes it to a whole new level.
I can imagine. No, I've been mostly focused on recreational bodybuilders so far, the guys that are doing it just for purely social reasons.
Yeah.
But I've sort of had a bit of an experience of the problematic nature of bodybuilding, and every bodybuilder that I have spoken to has said that in some way their body image is distorted. They say things like, you know, once you pick up a weight to be big, you are forever small. You know, they send me pictures of them with their after training pump on. They're looking huge. They're looking lean. And I say, oh, you must be happy. You know, you've put on a whole heap of muscle. And they go, nah, I'm still small and fat. You know, and so I can see how it can be problematic. And there is a sort of a continuum of problematic from, you know, yeah, look, I know my body image is a bit distorted, I'm most of the time satisfied, but some days I feel like a bit like shit, up to the other end where you've got full-blown muscle dysmorphia and you have absolutely no idea how you look, and you are absolutely obsessed about your use and your training and your diet. So I think there is a continuum that all bodybuilders fall along at some, and you know, they probably shift around, you know, depending on the looming competition, depending on summer approaching, or depending on whether they've been dumped by their girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever.
Right.
You know, I think we all move along this continuum. I mean, it's been acknowledged with eating disorders that all women anyway are on a continuum of from normal to problematic, and we all have some distortion of our body image. And I think it needs to be acknowledged with bodybuilders, and we're starting to look at, you know, muscularity-oriented eating disorders. The psychologists are starting to identify, and muscle dysmorphia is being diagnosed. But we need to acknowledge that it's not just these few sick people at the end of the continuum, that this is problematic. You know, there's all different degrees of being problematic when it comes to these sort of practices.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about insulin before we do, though.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, before we get to that, though, I want to throw something by you. I'm going to throw something at you.
Yeah.
We'll just see if it sticks for the future. All right, I'm coming at you. I would challenge you in that I would say, because you said that you haven't focused on competitors, you focused on the social aspects. Mm. I would say that for the competitor, once you've achieved that level, even be it, say, state, regional level bodybuilder, you are in another social group now. The people that that person interacts with, they are all competing too. You're just, I mean, really, realistically, if you want to talk about like levels of bodybuilding, you're leveling up there. You know, these people, because that's the thing, is that those people are now taking it that much more seriously and that much more focused, but they still, now they have their own group of people that they relate to. They're all people that are competing too. It's just a different food.
That's right. You know, food chain. That's right. And I mean, I started with recreational bodybuilders mainly because I started with Ziz and those guys, but also because most of the steroid use is amongst recreational bodybuilders. Like, we tend to think of athletes, competitive bodybuilders using steroids, and they do, But most of the use is now by recreational bodybuilders who just want to look good. So I suppose I started there because I thought, well, for these recreational bodybuilders, it's purely the social and cultural reasons that are making them use. Whereas if you're a competitive bodybuilder outside of a natural competition, arguably even within a natural competition, you have to use these drugs. There is an imperative. If you want to succeed in the sport, you have to use these drugs. So I wanted to look at these guys for whom it was more of a choice. But so saying, I've discovered that this boundary between recreational and competitive bodybuilding is quite blurry, because a lot of guys start there aiming for aesthetics and stuff, and then they go, oh, hang on, I like this. I want to compete in powerlifting or in bodybuilding. And apparently Ziz was looking to compete at one stage, but, you know, he died first. So I'm moving into, again, sort of broadening out from the Ziz fandom to steroid users in general, but recreational, now into competitive, which is segues nicely into our insulin, into my insulin research, because I gotta tell you too,
I love your answer for that. So far you've thought deeply. Like, I thought maybe I'm gonna bring something new to the table here, but no, you've already thought deeply about that. Like, we could have done a whole show just on that blurry line between competitive to non-competitive.
I was when you said an hour, I'm like, oh my god, how do I fit this all in an hour? Because I can go on and on and on about this. There is, you know, I have thoughts. You know, some guys would tell me you think too much about these things, but I mean, I could do, you know, 3 hours just on Ziz and his community. You know, so I could, insulin.
Yeah, we'll probably go a little long, but let's get to some insulin stuff for sure. And then after that, I want to let everybody know how to get a hold of you and how they could reach out, how they could follow what you're doing. But yeah, insulin.
Oh, awesome. Insulin. Well, yeah, so I suppose, you know, my interest in image and performance enhancing drugs got me really interested in this relationship between science and bro science, because I think, you know, most of your listeners would probably be familiar with the fact that science is sort of glorified in bodybuilding communities these days. And it wasn't always the case, where people, you know, in a forum or on Facebook, if they can cite an abstract from PubMed, then that their view is worth much more. There's this shift towards science. So there's this sort of, but then there's not enough science to fill all the gaps in bodybuilding practice. As we were saying before, they don't explore the doses that bodybuilders use. They don't explore the combination of drugs that bodybuilders use. There's all these gaps in scientific knowledge that we have to fill with bro science, with the experiential knowledge. So I was really interested in this science, bro science, you know, and this tension between, you know, the calling of the science guys, the PubMed ninjas or the PubMed warriors. And there's almost, oh yeah, you're just too reliant on the science. And then there's guys that are so reliant on the science that they're going, oh, look, do you even lift? You know, there's this tension between having the experiential knowledge and the scientific knowledge, and you know, you can't be pure science because there isn't enough science. So how does this relate? So I was exploring this with, you know, regards image and performance enhancing drugs in general, and I was coming across insulin, and I'm like, mate, I can't just do one paragraph in my broader paper on insulin. This is a whole, you know, a whole nother area. And this is what I mean. My research keeps opening up new avenues to explore, and I don't know how I'm going to fit it all in. But insulin seemed really fascinating because the medical literature is full of, well, not many, but a few case studies of bodybuilders in comas. There's all this talk about, you know, bodybuilders are going to kill themselves, we've got to stop them using insulin. And there's a, you know, an online survey or two, but otherwise we don't know anything about bodybuilders using insulin. So I thought, you know, I'll look into this. So again, you know, I've been hanging out online, I've been watching YouTube videos, and looking at the place of insulin in the bodybuilder's arsenal and the sort of history of insulin and the practice of insulin, which is absolutely fascinating. And it really sort of speaks to the fact that, you know, what I do, and I've called it in my past papers I've said, I'm looking at the social lives of image and performance enhancing drugs, which sounds a bit like a bit wanky that the drugs have social lives, but it sort of, it makes sense. You know, these drugs take on meaning in interactions between people, and they actually change social relations between people. You know, these drugs change what is possible and therefore what is idealized and what is aimed for. Hmm. So they sort of, they take on meaning, but they also shape us. And I mean, these drugs literally shape us. They shape what our bodies look like and what we can imagine is possible. So insulin is a really good example of this. It changed what was possible in bodybuilding. Most people will say the shift from golden era to the mass monsters was made possible by insulin and human growth hormone. Right. Now, this is a matter of debate. Insulin is such a, you know, there's so much debate around insulin, but most people would agree insulin and human growth hormone created the mass monsters that we're seeing today. So, it changed the face of bodybuilding. It changed the look too, you know, arguably, and again, there's a huge debate. I could do a whole paper on the debate over this, but some would say is responsible for bubble gut, that it has changed not only the size of the bodybuilder, but the aesthetics, you know, that we're starting to see this horrible protruding guts as a result of insulin use. So it's insulin is this fascinating drug that, you know, I could spend a career trying to tease out the debates, but I've found an endocrinologist who I'm going to work with. So, you know, my sort of job has been to build the rapport with the community, collect the stories and the practices of the community. And this endocrinologist who's keen on reducing harms amongst bodybuilders is going to evaluate bodybuilding practice, which I think would be fascinating because, you know, I've got all these bodybuilders saying, Milosh is the scientific way of using insulin, and his is the most widely cited protocol still today. You know, he's the scientific way of using insulin. And then other people go, oh, no, Milosh is full of shit. Dave Palumbo is the scientific way of using insulin. And these guys would tell me, you know, conflicting things. And I'm a social scientist. I don't have a fucking clue who's right.
Right.
So I thought if I can get an endo on board to evaluate the risks of what they're doing, whether their practices, what they're doing to keep themselves safe is actually effective, then I can actually contribute something back to the community and say, well, you know, actually, you know, Milosh is right or Dave Palumbo is right or neither of them are right and you should be using it in this way. So I'm hoping to not only, you know, tell the story of the insulin user, which is missing from knowledge, but to actually give back to the community in terms of making their use safer.
That's cool because, I think about what you're doing in the big picture. In a way, it kind of reminds me, I had gone to school for photography, and for a time I was really interested in documentary. And a big part of doing a documentary is getting embedded like you are. But the difference is that you are not altering anything. That's not the case for you. Mm-hmm. You can come in, you can change things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think ideally, and this is where I started, is that, I participate and observe, but I observe bodybuilders in their natural habitat of online forums behaving in natural ways that my presence isn't going to have too much impact. But there's a point where I just went, I can't just do that. I can't just report what's happening. I need to give back to this community not only represent them. And I think, you know, what I do is indirectly going to be beneficial in that, you know, I've heard, you know, drug workers say, I'd call my steroid users enhanced bodybuilders now because I've heard that's what they like to be called. And that, you know, that's from my research. You know, there's more respect for the community. Medicos are reading my stuff and going, oh, okay, this is how they're actually practicing. Okay, we need to consider these things. But I wanted to have more of a direct impact on the community's practice in that, you know, I can give them some feedback on how what they're doing is effective or not, or, you know, especially with regards harm reduction. We haven't given image and performance enhancing drug users much information on harm reduction. So they've come up with their own strategies, you know, the self-phlebotomy, you know, bleeding out to lower hematocrit, freezing sperm, blood testing, the AIs, vitamins, fish oil, paracetamol, all of these practices. They've come up with their own stuff in the absence of medical advice. So, you know, I'm hoping that I can, by conveying their practices, you know, turn the bro science into science, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
That, you know, I can actually get people with the knowledge, which I don't have, to evaluate these practices and you know, help give back to the community who have been, you know, so welcoming of me. I mean, I've been, you know, I've been trolled a few times and I've been told to fuck off by a few bodybuilders. But most bodybuilders are like, hey, she's taking an interest in what we do and who we are. Yeah. And they just, you know, they can't help me enough. And so, you know, I really want to give back to this community. So, plus, you know, I'm in better shape than I ever was. And that's all thanks to you guys.
Now, are you still lifting?
I am, but to a lesser degree. And okay. I must say I'm focused more on the functional side of things. You know, I still can't do a chin up. I've never been able to do a chin up.
Okay.
So I'm aiming to do a chin up rather than aiming to have abs, which I was initially trying to do. You know, I'm trying to focus on what can I do rather than how do I look a bit more, because as I said, it was making me a little bit crazy.
I think that's a really smart shift, and that's exactly what I would suggest anyone to do that was getting really hung up on the visible look, you know. But I like that, because you're turning it back into something positive. Now you mentioned, we were just talking about like what you can do to now help the community. Is that the direction you're going now? Or tell me more about what you're looking at here in the future. Because you're obviously not done with us yet. What is on the horizon?
Right. Well, there's so many things I could potentially explore. And it's kid in a candy store. I don't really know sometimes which way to go. So at the moment, I'm seeking feedback from the community on my current research. So I'm on at the moment writing up a few papers on one on image and performance enhancing drugs and sort of harms and benefits and harm reduction from the consumer's perspective. And then another on insulin and this relationship between science and bro science. And I haven't really had a much chance to talk to you about, you know, the practice of insulin. It's so varied and so debated. Like, I found guys using 4 IUs of insulin a day and other guys using 360. And it wasn't necessarily the competitive bodybuilders that were using the big doses. There's just such disagreement about how much to use, carbs to IU ratios, the balancing act involved in insulin use. So I'm writing up stuff on these topics at the moment. So I'm really keen to get feedback from anyone who goes, hang on, you know, she's missed out this idea, or, you know, that's not my experience, because I really want to accurately represent the community. So if people follow me and stuff, I post drafts of my papers for the community to give me feedback on, so that I'm accurately representing their lives and their practices. I'm not coming in from outside and, you know, writing, this is what they do. Oh, look at them. Aren't they idiots or something? I'm trying to understand, and I've got a whole lot of appreciation for the expert knowledge that goes into these practices. It is phenomenal. I would have to go and do, you know, more degrees, more postdoctoral study to just get my head around these practices. Some of these guys have got the most expert use on nutrition, on, you know, the pharmacology of their drug use. I have a huge amount of respect for bodybuilder knowledge, and I don't think, you know, we as a society appreciate it. You know, I've heard some medicos that are just so dismissive of bodybuilder knowledge, and I'm like, well, bodybuilders actually have known things, you know, sometimes decades before the medical establishment has caught up.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
So So I'm really about representing the community's perspective. So if anyone can give me feedback on my current stuff on insulin and image and performance enhancing drugs in general, I'm really keen to chat to anyone that's got it, wants to engage with me on this. But I'm also looking at some new projects that I've got to find funding for, and they're sort of just in the planning stages at the moment, but I want to see if they're viable. And one of them is women and image and performance enhancing drug use. You know, I've only talked to men so far. The groups that I'm in are mostly men, and sometimes women are sort of dismissed. They act quite dismissively to the women who use in some of the groups that I've been in. And I'd really like to understand how women's experience of these drugs differs from men's, how their practice of these drugs differ, how they negotiate their place in what is a quite masculine community, those sort of things. So any women that wanted to talk to me, and I understand that it's even more taboo for women to use these drugs than for men, but I'm hoping anyone that listens to me understands the respect I have for this community and the commitment that I have to conveying your stories as accurately as possible, that they might trust me enough with their stories. And people can talk to me anonymously if that makes them feel safer. I'm bound by the ethics of my research to never reveal who has talked to me. So there's no risk to anyone that wants to talk to me. So I'm looking for women who want to talk to me about their use. I have a burgeoning interest in gene doping and new technologies like CRISPR and things like that. If anyone has considered those sort of avenues to increasing their muscularity, or even, I don't know if anyone's trying these things out.
I think they're a little out of our reach at the moment. They're still a little out of our reach. I wouldn't say that there aren't people out there that do have access to it, but I will say that the community at large doesn't.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if we're not accessing these technologies yet, even attitudes towards these technologies and what people are considering with regards these technologies is of interest to me. So if anyone is even, you know, thinking about it, would like to consider in the future, should it become available, I'm always interested in hearing about that. And the final research project that I'm toying with at the moment, and you're going to think this is a bit weird. it's not so much about the drug use, but I came across some memes around bro jobs. Are you familiar with the term bro job?
No.
And I don't know if this is the way you foresaw this interview going. So a bro job is when a straight man gives his mate oral sex.
Naturally. So naturally, that's what it was.
Yeah. It makes sense. So I'm really interested in how the reduction of homophobia across our culture is allowing men to view each other's bodies in different ways
and changing. Is that a thing?
Bro jobs?
Yeah. That's a thing. Okay, I'm just wrapping my head around that right now. Okay.
It's a thing. It's a meme in the bodybuilding community. So I think for most part, it is a meme. There is some sort of copy pasta that people consistently put up. But it is so it is a joke, and there is a lot of joking around bro jobs. But there are bodybuilders that actually practice this as well. And I've come across one or two so far that do practice this, and for them, it's not about feelings and relationships. It's a outlet for their sexuality without all the sort of strings attached. And, you know, I've had guys say, oh, yeah, you know, I've sucked off the biggest guys in the gym. I don't actually go for gay men. I don't want any of the feelings and stuff. It's pure sort of animal sex.
Wow.
And to me, this is fascinating. So to... you know, I started out interested in this sort of Ziz fandom and the whole you Myron bra, yeah. And the appropriate response to you Myron bra is yes, Myron, in brackets, no homo. And then that evolved as that became a dull thing to say in it became yes, Myron, full homo, or yes, homo. And this sort of joking around homosexuality and, you know,
until dudes started sucking each other off.
There's a cartoon I can forward it to you, and it starts off, you know, something like, oh, you know, nice biceps, bra, you must be, you know, training really hard, no homo. And then it's, you know, nice abs, bra or something, you know, you must be bang on with your diet, no homo, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like, clean dick, bra, you must be, you know, keeping it really clean, no homo. And so there is some connection with bodybuilding around bro jobs, and I don't know what it is, but it's not just confined to bodybuilding. This straight men having sex with other men. It's more broadly than that, but there is something in the bodybuilding community, and it's probably mostly a joke, but there is some who practice this, and I'm really interested in this evolution of sexuality.
You've gone so deep. You've gone beyond. I didn't even think that this was a direction, but it is, obviously. And there's a rich history of homosexuality in bodybuilding in general. Like, I think you could probably, you could go down a long path with that one.
There's so many paths I could go down. And you know, some people have said in the literature before, you know, bodybuilding's always been a homosexual practice. It's just been butched up by the likes of Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone and stuff. But I by no means, all of the guys that I've spoken to have been straight. There's a lot of straight guys that bodybuild and use these drugs. And I'm sure there are a lot of gay guys that bodybuild and use these drugs.
Sure.
But this sort of blurring of, yes, I'll have sex with other men, but I'm straight, this sort of separation between the sexual activity and their orientation and identity is fascinating. And I think I think the mainstreaming of bodybuilding has been allowed by the fact that we aren't as homophobic as we used to be, and we're allowing men to look at each other's near naked bodies and appreciate them without all this, oh, you must be a fag, sort of a policing of masculinity with homophobia.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested in how masculinity is evolving now that homophobia has reduced. So, you know, I've got these ideas around bro jobs and the men looking at other men that I really want to explore further.
Right on.
So if anyone wants to talk to me about that, that'd be great.
So one more thing I want to ask you. You said that you were writing some of the stuff into papers.
Yes.
Is there a place that people will be able to get this stuff, or do they need to reach out to you? How does that work?
Yeah. Well, look, I think I've already got a draft of an insulin paper on my Facebook wall, but I'm writing up my image and performance enhancing drugs, harm benefit, harm reduction paper. I'm writing that up sort of over the next month or so. But if people follow me on Facebook, I'm Maya Underwood Researcher. I will forward the details and you can put it in the description. My name is spelt funny is all. It's M-A-I-R, Maya Underwood Researcher on Facebook. You can friend me, follow me on there, send me messages through that. I have my YouTube, Maya Underwood, where you can see some of my previous research and some of my ideas. I try and make videos so that, because some people don't want to read a draft of my paper, you know, and I try to write accessibly, but it's still an academic paper. So some people don't want to read that. Some people do. So YouTube, I've even got a Wicca. If anyone wants to contact me anonymously, I'll send you that. And I'm also at the University of Queensland, m.underwood at uq.edu.au. You can always email me. So if anyone's keen on giving me feedback on my current sort of research interests, or if they've got thoughts on my future research interests, or they can help me out by participating in any research, I'd greatly appreciate that.
Yeah, and guys, of course, as always, we'll have all of Maya's contact information in the show notes. And if you go to our Facebook page, when we post the show, we will have a link to her Facebook account, so you guys can check her out. Man, this is my mind is totally blown right now. Like this was so cool. This was so fun.
Oh, look, Matt, it is so fun. It is, as I said, I struggle not to work. And it's, you know, I was on holiday and I was thinking, oh, yay, you know, I get to do work in a couple of days. And I thought, how many people are that excited about what they do? And unfortunately, I don't think it's that many. But, I mean, how could I not be when my job is to hang out with you guys online and convey your stories and, you know, stories that need to be heard and, you know, and they're not being heard. And I think it's, you know, appalling that we are sort of ignorant of this huge section of our population. So, yeah, look, I'm super keen to talk to anyone that wants to engage with me, even if they want to troll me. You know, I love being trolled. It's great data as well, you know. So,
I don't know if you should have said that. You're asking for trouble.
I probably shouldn't have, but it's wonderful data. So yeah, look, any interaction with me is welcome. Preferably stuff that's actually going to be engaging me at a deeper level than sending me some, you know, trolling. But
yeah,
whatever I can get, I'm happy to. As I said, I feel completely indebted to this community for one, for making me live my best life in my body, and for two, turning me on to my passion. You know, this started off as just a career choice, but, you know, I cannot, and I'm hoping it comes through, how passionate I am about this. I cannot express, you know, how deeply I feel about this, and how I sort of have found my life's purpose. I want to fix stuff for steroid users. I want to make it so that they can use as safely as possible, and so that they receive support, and so that the laws are no longer causing harm to consumers. You know, this is what I want to do. So if anyone can help me, that'd be great. And I thank you, Scott, for allowing me to have a voice on your excellent podcast to, you know, to engage with this community. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Guys, for another episode of Advices Radio with Maya Underwood, anthropologist, we will see you soon. All right, guys, that's another episode of Advices Radio. Maya Underwood, episode 88. Stay tuned this week for a whole lot more, including Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott. Hey, guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
ADVICES Radio Network.